Kuna City Council Meeting, April 2nd, 2013.
7 p.m. and we'll call the meeting to order. And Linda, would you have the roll call, please?
Council President Cardoza.
Here.
Councilmember Hoyland.
Here.
Councilmember Buben Vanderhar.
Here.
Councilmember Steer.
Here.
Mayor Nelson.
Here. Thank you. We have Reverend Scott Piper here to give the invocation.
Heavenly Father, thank you for government. We thank you for these individuals who serve our community, and we ask, Lord, that you would give them wisdom as they make decisions. We pray, Lord, that they will be guided and directed by your wisdom, and that they would be doing service and making decisions for the good of our community. We ask that you will give them that ability, even beyond their own abilities. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Would you now join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item of business tonight is the consent agenda. Questions or comments on the consent agenda?
Mayor, I have one correction that I already told Brenda about. Okay. On 1A2, page 404, the vote tally on that motion was incorrect, so she's corrected it to reflect that nobody voted no.
All right. Thank you. Additional comments or questions or corrections? Hearing none, and
Mr. Mayor, I would move we approve the consent agenda as presented.
Do you need that correction in there?
Oh, with the maybe correction made by Brianna.
Okay.
Second.
Been moved and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carried. All of the opposed say no. Motion carried. Okay, next item of business is J&M Sanitation Kuna Cleanup. Chad?
Mayor, council members, it's that time of year again. So we're getting revved up for our annual cleanup project. We are shooting right now for May 11th, Saturday, May 11th. So far, it looks like it's going to work for everybody. I've got all the boxes lined up. We've got the four donated from Ada County. And then we will have another eight for trash. And then, what was it, six for, total of six from Pacific Recycling for a combination of scrap metal recycling and refrigerators. And then we've also got the tire trailer set up, and the haz waste unit will be out there that day collecting paint, solvents, pesticides, car batteries, so on and so forth. Once again, we'll be doing curbside and the drop site down at the city park. So I'm sure as in years past, we will have much success. And I think as of right now, I've got about four to five groups that are looking to participate, combination of Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, 4-H groups, so on and so forth. So we hope to see anybody that has the time on that day to be out there. And once again, we'll get the town all cleaned up. Is there any questions or concerns or otherwise?
Mr. Mayor, I don't know if it's specifically for him. I had a citizen that lives in the subdivision at the end of Stagecoach approached me, and apparently the portion of that that isn't developed yet, people have been dumping stuff in there. I don't know if there's some way
that,
I mean, maybe we have to contact the property owner to do that. I don't know, but
trying to think of which subdivision. Yeah. Is that the one that's on
if
the
you,
east
if you go
side
clear
of
to the end of Stagecoach, just keep going off the end of the
okay
road.
Okay, so it would be
is that McBride's land?
No, it's there's the subdivision there, and I'm trying to remember the name of it right offhand. I can't think because it
yeah, changed. I can't either.
Pioneer Estates.
Yeah,
is what it is.
That is it.
And I think I probably know where you're talking about, because there is the very farthest section to the east that only has one house in it, and I noticed a lot of traffic looked like it had been coming in and out of the dirt area off to the east of there. So, I mean, barring any unforeseen issues with us allowing a group to go on there and clean it, I don't, you know, we don't have any problem with helping out on that project.
Try to get ahold of the landowner and see if that's okay.
That sounds like a good Eagle project.
Yeah.
Well, they had a barricade at the end of the road, and that's been broken down so people can drive in there now.
So it's probably actually at the end of the Stagecoach past the pond?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Down in that
if you
area.
Go right on
okay.
past the pond and just keep going along keep the going. Railroad tracks, and then you can turn into it.
Okay, because there is kind of another entrance to that area through the subdivision itself that yeah. I've noticed people driving in and out of. So, yeah, I mean, we got no problem, you know, and if you guys have any other suggestions of areas like that that look like they need to be focused on, I generally try to send a crew of the inmate labor. I have them lined up again for this year. That's kind of why I got pushed back, was because they had some conflicting dates as far as doing it at the end of April, so we went to the May 11th date, which seemed to work for everybody. But I generally try to send them down along the Greenbelt, do some cleanup along the Greenbelt as far as pulling weeds, so on and so forth, trash pickup. So, you know, if the city does have any areas like that that, you know, or if somebody comes to you and says, hey, we got an area that we see as a nuisance, let us know, and we'll by all means, you know, get somebody over there and get it cleaned up on that day. That's what it's all about, trying to get some of those spots taken care of. So.
Awesome. We appreciate you guys doing that every year. It's a great thing for our community.
Absolutely. You know, and I think everybody's, you know, taking full advantage of it, and it does make a huge difference for the community to have that done and have all that cleaned up. So we're glad to be able to provide that.
Any other comments? Well, we sure want to thank you. I don't know, how many years have you been doing that, Tim?
I tried figuring it out the other day, and I think 26, it's 20,
wow.
maybe 27, 28, I think, somewhere in there.
Awesome.
It's made a tremendous difference in the looks of the community and all. I want to thank you and Tim and Greg.
Well, we're glad to be able to do it.
Glad to do it.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. New business. City of CUNY employee cell phone policy. Richard?
I knew it.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Before you is a proposed policy for the employees at the request of John Marsh, who's been administering the cell phones. As you may know, a number of city employees receive cell phones. The city has, by policy, purchased a basic phone and basic minutes for those employees who have a phone. Given to them. What some of those employees have opted to do is upgrade to a smartphone, and so some questions have come up regarding those upgrades. What the city's doing is having them pay for the difference between the basic phone, which is typically free, and the smartphone. As you may know, those smartphones then have data packages that come with them, may go through additional minutes, because they're using them for their personal. So this just allocates the cost of those to the employee, allows for the payroll deduction. And significantly, one of the issues that comes up is if the city buys them the basic phone and they've upgraded to the smartphone and the smartphone is damaged, who's going to pay for the cost of that upgrade? So the policy really stands to take care of some of those issues. I'll stand for any questions.
Okay, you know, for the council, you know, they fully understand it had to be explained to me, because, you know, my cell phone doesn't do all the modern things, and I can live without that, but apparently the younger crowd can't. They have to be able to upgrade.
Mayor?
Yes.
I have some concern about doing this whole letting them upgrade thing, because it seems like we're just ending up having to do a lot more than we would if we were just providing a phone and saying this is the city's property and you should just use it for city business. I mean, with having to track each person that has it, and did they upgrade, and okay, so how much of this bill should we bill them for, and how much are we responsible for, and, you know, should the phone need repair or something like that? I understand they're responsible for replacing it, but if it just needs a repair, are we prorating that as well? It just seems like it's way more complicated than it needs to be. And I would be in favor of just saying, you get the phone you get, and it's city property, so you shouldn't be concerned about upgrading it and stuff. I guess I just don't see why employees, if they want a smartphone, they can't just get their own phone that's their personal phone, and then we don't have to deal with rationing out the portions of the bills and monitoring how much they're using it to make sure that we're not paying for personal time. This is my personal preference.
Okay. I think, Richard, doesn't it save them money?
Yeah, I think there's two considerations. Number one is when it's their own phone, especially the people on call, they're always going to have their own phone with them. They may not always take the city phone or carry two phones, but more significantly, they also get a savings on the plan through the city. So there's a little bit of a cost savings there too for them. But I don't know exactly what that is, but certainly comments are well appreciated on there is an accounting issue that I think John can address as to keeping track of that. I don't know how much time he spends doing that.
I don't have a ton of sympathy for just the convenience factor of, well, we won't have to carry two phones, because if it's part of their job, then they just have to do it, and they need to carry the phone, and that's just the long and short of it for me. I mean, I have to have two phones for work because I've had the same phone for work for 5 years, and they don't upgrade it for me. I have to, you know, it's just not something that the government chooses to wade into. So I would still be hesitant to engage in that extra burden.
Mayor, got a question. How many phones do we provide in the city?
Just over 20.
20 phones for, we got what, about 40 employees? So about half the people got phones?
It's all public works.
Now, I understand the need to communicate, but in another 10, 15 years, when CUNA's 35,000 people and the city staff doubles, you know, it's probably manageable now, but when we get bigger, you know, I guess we have to review the policy. I just kind of think I kind of agree with Brianna that's probably a little bit much.
On some level, I feel like it's almost unfair to the employees who don't have phones, because the city is subsidizing the phone use of certain employees, but there's no phone stipend, if you will, for the employees that aren't given phones.
Yeah, and I had one of the considerations in drafting this and some of the comments in there are perhaps taking a look at the determination. I had drafted some language as to the determination as to who actually should have a phone. Is it just those people on call, or somebody who has to be reached immediately type of thing, or does everybody just have one? I know I have my own phone, and a lot of my minutes are city minutes, because that's the number that I give out, and you can reach me on it at all times, and I don't expect reimbursement, but 20 does seem a little bit high, so perhaps it's an opportunity now to say, we like this part of it, but we want to reevaluate and have, you know, a phone given out to that person that's on call and nobody else, or those people that have to be reached 24/7 on emergency, or that type of thing. Certainly, I can appreciate that.
Mayor, I can see how in public works that money can be saved by having phones. You know, you call so-and-so clear across town, I need this wrench or whatever. You'd rather have to make two trips across town, you're spending money and gas and time. So I can see where it can make the, you know, the city more efficient in their operations. But I just don't know about the smartphone aspect of it, like Brianna right. said.
I have no idea what the threshold is for qualifying for this, so we might be too low. But have we looked at all into whether whatever cellular carrier we choose to use for our city phones, if they would be willing to give our employees a discount should the employees choose to open a personal line?
You do get a discount.
Okay.
Yeah, you get a discount. Is it 17%? 17%, an employee of Kuna gets a 70% discount on their personal plan if they go through Verizon.
I guess some other things that I'm a little unsure about are, like, what happens if, I mean, if the employee leaves, if they get fired or if they quit, because at least a portion of the phone is city property in theory, then do they reimburse us for the rest of it? Will Verizon let them change that account over to their own, or do they, just a little unclear. And what sorts of access do we have to the phone information should we need information on that account from Verizon?
For the city employee provided phone or for the employee provided phone?
If the city is the phone covered by the policy.
Okay. We get those bills, so they all come to the city. I believe when that employee terminates their employment, depending on where that phone is in the plan, if it's a basic phone that's paid for, if it's a basic phone, they turn it back in. If it's a smartphone that they paid for, any difference between that phone and if there's any amount due, let's say they're employed for 6 months, they've done the phone plan, that type of thing, then they would be asked to pay the city back by a payroll deduction on the last check for that phone, and they would then own the phone.
Okay. And do we have, I presume or hope then that should we need to contact Verizon for whatever information about the account, we would have the ability to get that? Would the employee have the ability to get that as well?
On the city phones that are covered, we get that information, and that we have access to that because we're the primary account holder on that. So we get all that information.
So how, I guess, I'm not trying to get too far into the weeds, but how does the employee go about making additional charges on an account that's not theirs in order to do the upgrades and stuff? Are we having to facilitate that for them too?
I believe we have to facilitate that. Is that right? Yes.
Yeah, I think that's just a little too much, having us, have to actually buy a phone, pick out some personal phone for the employee and buy it for them and stuff like that. I'd rather just separate it and say, if they're city phones, we decide what they are. You get them for city use. And if you want your own phone, here's the 17% discount we've worked out for you.
There's maybe only one catch to this. Are these 20 phones, are they already out there? Do they already have smartphones? Do we have to take them back and undo stuff? And is that worth it?
My understanding, and John can answer, is the reason this has now come up is we're at a renewal period for a number of these phones, and I think most have just a city phone. Is that right? There's not a...
Majority of them actually have upgraded to a smartphone, and so... I'm sorry, you can't hear me. To undo it is not that big of a deal on the city's end of things. It's pretty straightforward. It's just a matter of taking the plan back, getting from a data plan back to a straight talking minutes or text plan. It's pretty straightforward. We retain the numbers. Nothing will change in that regard. It's just a matter of changing the services that are on the phone itself.
That was one of the issues, was the two-year renewal period. So it gave us that opportunity to say, what do we want to do and how do we want to address this?
Yeah, my preference would be to take that opportunity to sever the upgrade ability, just because it seems like a lot of administrative effort for not a lot of city return.
Richard, could we find out what Ada County Sheriff does with, I know each one of them are supplied with a telephone.
Yes, sir.
Are you allowed to use it after hours for personal?
It's kind of an unwritten rule. It creates a problem. It's a little bit more administrative headache for us. We have one person that pretty much a large portion of their job is just dealing with cell phones and communication stuff. We're allowed to use it for personal calls, but the rule is if you are going to use it for personal calls, you have to answer it pretty much 24/7 because they're giving you the phone. And we do have a minute requirement, so every deputy is assigned 400 minutes. So if I only use 200 and another person uses 600, it washes out. And Verizon is free, so
all of our phones talking to each other. We might have 1,000 minutes, but it's not costing anything other than our plan. We do not upgrade. We don't allow for personal upgrades. So if you want to get a different phone, you have to go out and buy your own phone.
On your own plan, right?
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, any other questions?
No.
Direction then from council, would you like me to redraft a policy with no upgrades and how we're going to deal with that?
That would be my preference, yeah. And the same stuff about the limited personal use, that kind of stuff. To me, the personal use is less of an issue. I appreciate having like minute allowances and things like that. I don't know what our plan is, but considering when you get to like 9 p.m., it's free anyway, and with all the Verizon to Verizon stuff, which is what I have, I barely use any minutes just because of how I use my phone. So I'm less concerned about that, but I think it should be included too.
Yeah, and we do the same thing. We buy a bank of minutes and try to assign those, but there's some flexibility there.
Yeah.
But again, if they're all Verizon, and even if the city main number and Gordon's number is put in it, they should probably have no minutes unless they're using it for the personal. So, okay.
Perfect.
Is that kind of the consensus, Doug, that you want to redraft it?
Well, that was my next question. I feel that it's a fringe benefit to our employees of working for the city. If John doesn't feel that it's a time-consuming for the bookkeeping, I'd be inclined to feel that it's one of the benefits of working for the city, that as long as they pay their own smartphone bill, I don't see a problem with it. So I guess now it's up to Joe how he feels, whether we'll have a...
I guess my biggest thing is if it creates a hardship for bookkeeping, I'm kind of like Rich in the fact that I don't see a huge problem with it as long as it doesn't create a lot of staff time to deal with it.
One thing that's still sticking out for me is it seems like we're treating our employees differently. You've got some people who need a phone for their job, and so the city's subsidizing a large part of their phone bill versus employees who don't have that need, and so they're stuck with just using the 17% discount, which is already pretty generous, and getting their own phone. And it feels to me like all the employees should be similarly situated. Every city employee gets the same access to the 17% discount, and if you need a phone for work, you use the work phone. It seems like that's the fairest way to treat everybody.
What distinguishes who gets a phone? I would imagine supervisory capacity people have a phone. Those that are on call for that specific day as a phone, out of 40 employees, 20 of them have phones. What's the criteria of qualification for the phone then?
I don't believe historically there has been any written criteria, and it may be...
Sorry, guys. Just to answer a couple questions. From bookkeeping standpoint, it's not that bad. We've had it set up, and basically the employee has selected the additional plan over and above the city plan. The city's plan is a pooled minute, kind of like the sheriff deputy had mentioned. We do the same similar thing, and then if you want additional minutes over that to use it for personal use, then you select a plan and upgrade from there, and the employee pays the difference. It comes out as a payroll deduction, so there's no tracking. It's just automatic every pay period, the first pay period of the month. And then as far as the criteria goes, basically what we're doing is the folks in the field, the public works folks, from a communication standpoint, it makes things a little easier for them. Kind of the idea behind smartphones is it allows them to get on the internet even when they're in the field, say they're in a trench, for example, working on a water line, to maybe learn something about a valve or maybe search out the price or the availability, things of that nature. I mean, it's not mandatory or even necessary, but it just makes everybody a little more efficient. But it's sixes either way. Six and one, half dozen another, it doesn't matter. And the as far as the rate goes, the city under the WISCA contract, which is the Western States Contracting Alliance, gets the 17% discount. That same discount is what a non-public works employee would get. So let's just say one of the council members wanted to opt into Verizon under the city, they would also get the 17% discount. That's the same discount the city itself gets. So it's kind of across the board, if you will. So.
What does the total cost to the city each month for all the phones?
It's remained very consistent. The city used to be with Sprint. We had some service issues, so we switched to Verizon about a year and a half ago. And it's always been right around $800 in total, even before we went into kind of this mode. It's about $1,300 when we include the employees portion, but that's deducted from their paycheck. So the net is about $800 to the city total.
So the employees are paying about $500 out of their own pocket.
Right in there, yes, correct.
So, does your son have a cell phone yet?
Not yet. No, not yet.
He's chewed on a couple.
yeah, he'll ruin it.
Okay, well, we have two kind of wanting to go one way and one another, and Joe, it comes down to which way would you like it to go?
I guess I'm okay with this until it ever proves to be a problem. I mean, I see where Brianna's coming from, and I kind of agree, but I don't know. I just don't see a problem with this until it actually proves itself to be a problem.
Can I ask one more question? And maybe John's the right person to answer this. If the phones were the standard, basic, really simple phones and the city had them, would there be any potential for shared use? And what I mean by that is, if, for example, the on-call person rotates, it's not the same person every day, would we just have an on-call phone that changes with the person?
The city used to have that. They used to have phones amongst the many in the field. They also had an on-call phone that would kind of sit there for somebody that would go on call. However, that's changed because of the now I can't remember the name of the acronym that actually calls our city phones when there's a problem with our lift station or a pump house or something of that nature. So now what they use is just standard, the phone, the person that's on call for that evening or that day or that week, that's input into that that program. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of it. It'll actually call that phone number. So we used to have that. We minimized and dropped the number of phones down and took out those on-call phones that were really just sitting there and not being utilized because of the way we're at now. So that used to be in place, and it does work too.
I just didn't know if currently, if people hadn't upgraded their phones, if there would be the potential to just share phones, and we're lacking that capability now because people bought their own, and so we can't share them anymore. I just wondered if that was the case.
I guess you could. I mean, just standard issue phones, they could share. We just have to determine which employees would get them, and I guess the reasoning behind that and then how they get shared. So certainly that could be an option too. Right now the idea is, there, years and years ago, the city used to have CB radios, and you have to, unless you use what's called family radio service or GMRS or something like that, it's kind of the radios you can buy at Fred Meyer where you just kind of talk to your friends or whatever. Technically speaking, FCC-wise, I don't believe we could use that for city services. So we'd have to go back to a CB radio. We'd have to invest in the radios. And then I think you have to lease frequency on the airwaves. And so you're also paying that. So basically the idea is CB radios are kind of on their, I mean, cell phones are taking the place of those, if you will, to a certain degree. And so the cell phones now are kind of the communication piece among employees and things of that nature. So long story short, you could share them. They would be standard issue phones without the data plan. You can get on the internet. It's basically just talking or text. So that's an option also. Hopefully I answered that.
I think so. Yeah, Good enough.
Well, John said it falls heavier on you than anybody if we adopt this or if we're even comfortable with what we're doing now. Are you pretty comfortable with this policy and with what we're doing? Or
Yeah, what Richard's drafted here is great. I think really what we needed is just some parameters around what we're doing. We certainly, the idea is to get it before council. Do you guys want to entertain the idea of having city employees driving and talking or texting? Do we want to? We certainly, that's one of the things we want to address. As far as the administration of it, it's really not too bad. It's set in place, the employee option for the plan they want, and then we identify the cost, and then we do a payroll deduction. From there, it's just pretty automatic. Every month we get a statement. Verizon has an online user interface that allows us to track from an accountability standpoint usage. And so it's pretty user-friendly and doesn't require much time once it's set up.
Thank you.
One final question. If we did have an interest in changing this, is it something where basically every 2 years would be the appropriate times to do it without making it quite challenging?
Oh, I don't think so. No, it's just it came up at the point in time as we were doing it, and John and I were talking about some of these issues and decided that it was time to do a cell phone policy, but we could change it in between.
Okay, and does John handle, I lied, apparently one more question. Do you handle then if the employees want to upgrade again, like new every two, every time they want a new phone, they have to come to you and then you buy it for them? And
Yeah, and it again also is a payroll deduction, and so
right. But you have to sit down with them, figure out what phone they want, and then you have to go buy it.
Yeah, basically it's pretty straightforward through Verizon. We just do everything online, and they ship it out and get it in a couple days. It's been pretty streamlined. It hasn't been. We haven't had any problems per se. A few broken phones, but that's always gone pretty seamlessly. And actually, what happens is through WISCA, we get really reasonably priced phones. We don't get the newest phones on the market, but of course we don't need those. But actually, our renewal comes up every year, and so the ability for us to renew every year and get new phones, brand new phones, the standard issue phones would be brand new. And if an employee wants to upgrade to a new smartphone at that point in time, of course, then there's that additional cost, which they would bear the cost through a payroll deduction. So ultimately, the city's not out any additional.
Okay, any further questions of Richard or John?
Mayor, since we've had further discussion here, and it's only an $800 bill to the city, and John's willing to, he thinks it's manageable, I think I'll side with Joe and Rich here. Sorry, Brianna.
Okay, then, if so, then we'd need a motion to adopt whatever this is. Policy?
City of Kuna employee cell phone policy.
Cell phone policy.
Mr. Mayor, I would move we adopt the City of Kuna employee cell phone policy.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Motion carried. 3-1. Okay. Beautification of the Southwest Gateway. Wendy?
Okay, we've been working on this for some time now. Southwest Gateway Enhancement. Let's just see if I can figure this out. Ah. So I don't have to point it at you to get it to work. Okay.
Wendy, could you pull the mic up to your mouth? I have trouble hearing you. I'm sorry.
Didn't get out of that, did I? The Southwest Gateway Enhancement will create a sense of confidence and a warm welcome for both the current and future business owners, residents, and visitors alike as they enter the downtown core. Excuse me, got a throat problem today. The residents of Kuna expressed an interest in the downtown revitalization that promotes a small town feel and embraces current and emerging development trends. The revitalization efforts should include provisions for walkability, was also what the residents wanted. The community also expressed that downtown's geographic footprint should expand and connect commercial areas. relationship to other projects would be the comprehensive plan identifies the community's vision for the downtown, and this plan also supports the downtown corridor plan. It's our the city's hope, our hope, the people that have been working on this hope, to see that the downtown businesses will add to the improvement by continuing to enhance their exterior facade of their buildings. And then maybe the next phase, would be working on the downtown area with bulb outs, larger sidewalks, etc. The project completion date for the entire project, because it will probably have to be phased somewhat, would be before the centennial celebration in 2014. As you know, the Ada County Extension Office has provided the educational opportunities for local residents, and as part of this beautification, we are planning that the area, let me get it to a picture, the area north of the bridge behind Pizza Hut on both the east and west sides of the street will become grassed area, maybe a tree or two, you know, something like that. There will be landscaping in the right-of-way from Bridge Avenue to Shortline Street and from Bridge Avenue to West Avalon, as room allows. The triangle portion, where the three roads intersect, will have curbing poured and landscaped with water-wise native plants. This area may contain a welcome to CUNA sign later down the road. The community garden, as you're all well aware, is across the street, and that will include is including pressurized irrigation, a tool shed, white picket fencing with an arbor along the entrance of the garden, designated planters with raised planters, designated parking, and in front of the city hall, planting maybe a few trees or raised planters as well. We are hoping to partner with ACHD, Ada County Highway District. The city anticipates using three of the downtown corridor plan projects and incorporate them to the overall plan. This would include addition of a bike lane and detached sidewalk from Avenue D to Bridge Avenue, which will enhance safety for the peds and bicyclists. Installation of an enhanced pedestrian crossing to improve the safety and reducing the potential conflicts between traffic and the pedestrians. And that would be at the Greenbelt, where the existing crosswalk is. From Bridge Avenue's bridge extending to Shortline Street, an addition of a ped connection between the proposed roundabout at Bridge Avenue, Avalon, Shortline Street intersection. And this again will provide connectivity. We're anticipating pavement improvements will be constructed as needed, and a sleeve for electricity and irrigation be installed as well. This is the most exciting part, I hope, for you too. We're also thinking about adding, or thinking, we want to add aesthetic improvements to the existing bridge on Bridge Avenue. This is as it sits now. This is what we're hoping for.
Wow.
Our thoughts were a bridge overlay, therefore we're not disrupting the current construction. Black paint or powder coated the bridge rail, as you can see the bridge separation, and planter solar lighting. We'll have to, because of the width of it, we're talking about different variations of where we could do the planters or maybe incorporate it into where the lights are or move the lights. Anyways, but you've got the basic idea.
Could we just do the walkway on one side and have it be extra wide? I don't know if that would work with it, if it needs to jog or not, but it would make it a lot wider if we needed to.
That's a possibility as well.
Well, they have sidewalks on both sides.
Currently, yeah.
And, granted, the one on the east is kind of a sidewalk that ends at the railroad track, and it's kind of dangerous. We were trying to incorporate that as much as we could, but you still have to go across tracks. But this would be a pretty inexpensive way of just taking what we've got there and beautifying it. So we haven't talked to the highway district about putting only a pedestrian crossing on one side, but I have seen on the right side a whole lot of unsafe things by people crossing there. So. Anyway, this is still just conceptual, so we are going to be starting to make some moves on it, though, so we want to make sure that everybody knows and kind of agrees that, yeah, maybe then just having a dusty, gravelly entrance into the city, maybe something pretty would be nice. Okay, Wendy, thanks.
Thank you. The implementation of this plan has been through several partnerships. And like I said, we're hoping for ACHD to come on board. I am submitting a kind of a grant, I guess, but it's economic development application to ACHD with this proposal to see, and it will be a proposal where it will be scored, and it is competitive, so. This identifies the right-of-way. Parcel 1 and 2, you can see them identified up there, are city parcels. Particularly where parcel number 2 sits, it actually sits over the top of the roadway that's used there now. When the roundabout goes in, years down the road, they'll need to have this dedicated to them as well for right of way. So I was hoping that we could maybe get you guys' blessing to proceed with the thought of maybe using that as some in-kind to help this all come together.
I think that makes sense. It's such an awkward, small area. I can't imagine we'd have much else to do with it.
And, you know, even by keeping what there is that we don't need or what have you, and creating an island there, whether they go to a roundabout or what have you, most of that would probably be in the center of the roundabout. So, and then we also have property on the other side where the Griggs property for the sale of cars is an auto show. So.
Questions?
That's great.
That's what my head looks like.
One thing you didn't cover is the green belt that will be finished up behind the bank and up the road. And then on the BMX side, we'll take those scraggly trees out and we'll we'll plant that also. And so that when you come in, you'll see the island and beautification on both sides, a nice bridge, and into a finished greenbelt. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if we get that done by CUNA Days in 2014, we'll dedicate that whole thing as part of our 150th anniversary. Yeah. Entrance or whatever.
So, what I'm hearing is the intent is to try to do this without using any of the city's scarce funds, you know, trying to get grants or AC or partners, Chamber of
Commerce.
Trying
to partner, use a lot of in-kind. We've already got several stakeholders that have donated time, energy into this. I'm sure it will cost the city, I'm sure that it'll cost the city some.
Your scouts.
It always does.
Yeah, I jumped on this. And all the businesses that are by the unfinished greenbelt, they're all enthusiastic about helping and helping to fund it. So it's one of those things that we're doing a heavy search on grants. And we're telling all of our friends to help us, and most generally they are. So.
So if there's no questions, that's all I've got for you. Thank you. Thank you.
Good job, Wendy. Thank you.
Yeah, that looks good. I want it done now.
Yeah. Yeah, don't we all?
Mayor?
Yes.
In conjunction with that, what's happening with the urban renewal downtown?
Nothing.
Nothing. Kind of got tabled and never got passed.
You know, one of the things that we've told ACHD is they have to pick the crossing.
Right.
You know, no matter where. Because it's, if we're going to do urban renewal, that would go in the footprint.
Okay.
And so we, and you know, the way it was passed was legal, but it was never quite understood by the community. And I think we'll just back up and have a community vote about the fact that we're ready to do an urban renewal. But, you know, what I really ought to do is bring some people that actually are working on urban renewal beside NAMPA that are just delighted with what they've been able to do with it, you know, and that I guess I should bring some of their citizens, because every time you read the newspaper and you hear something bad about urban renewal, it's coming out of NAMPA.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not quite sure what they've done that's so false, but boy, there are some real good things in urban renewal.
All right.
Okay, the next item of business is the budget workshop calendar.
Okay, for the record, John Marsh. Hey, sorry, I had to bring him this evening. His mom is traveling on business, and my backup plan backed out at the last minute, so I guess you all need to be babysitters.
We actually like it when he's here better.
Thanks. I'm going to teach him a challenge.
You probably do too. We won't yell and stuff. You should bring him to the budget.
Oh, you will. Wait till he starts crying.
John, if he cries, you have to identify the speaker.
So basically, this is just the budget calendar is just a planning document, more or less, just to kind of get you thinking. It's not set in stone. I tried to structure it kind of similar to last year. Mondays and Tuesdays, I tried to pick city council meetings, combine them with a council meeting where possible, where they were potentially short. The biggest thing that to come out of this really is just to identify and allow us to be able to set the public hearing date for the fiscal year in 2014 budget. And that's what, and the reason for that is we have to let the county know by the end of this month what that date would be. And so on here, it ties in with basically the same date that we had last year, save for a day, which would be September 3rd, which would be, which is a Tuesday, which is actually a canceled meeting. And so I didn't know if you want to discuss that or want to think about it.
There's one day that I know we need to change.
Okay.
June 18th. Well, first of all, it's scheduled right now to happen during the council meeting, but I know we also have a meeting with the school board prior to council that
okay.
night. So if it's okay that it happens during the meeting,
yeah.
then we don't need to change it.
Yeah, that was the plan. So really what we've got is the Ada County Sheriff, Cody, like in past years, he's just kind of come in and presented where they're at, and then through the course of the budget cycle, it comes up several more times. And then the Ada County Prosecutorial Service is very similar. It's pretty short. And then the LID fund, not likely to be anything, but there's a potential. We won't know until we get to that point. And then the grant fund, again, we won't know until we get a little closer whether or not we'll have a grant to account for, or grants. And so basically, during that meeting, it should be very, very short. Otherwise, and again, there are dates in here that you can pick as we go along. Like last year, we changed it several times. If you wanted to pick another day, if something doesn't get resolved, if you need more information, there's lots of dates in here. It's just I tried to be consistent. So, again, if September 3rd is okay for everybody, which is the last available date. We can always move it back in time if we need to. But again, I've got to report to the county on that date so they can publish it. So if that's okay with everybody, we can move forward with that.
Yeah, for tonight, then, you just need to say that this is acceptable so they can get the thing over
yeah,
to the county.
Yeah, basically, and all I really need is for you to be able to let me know if September 3rd for the annual appropriation hearing, budget hearing is okay, and the rest of it is all kind of stuff we can work through down the line.
Looks good.
I reviewed this with my schedule today, and it all will work for me, too, so.
Yeah, works for me. Okay, we probably need a motion then to adopt the 2014 budget workshop calendar.
Move we adopt the 2014 budget workshop calendar, specifically September 3rd as the public hearing.
Yeah.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Further question? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion carried. Okay, next slide. Thank you, John.
Sure. I think there's one more right after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Yep.
Okay, resolution number R08-2013, authorizing the city treasurer to create a fiduciary fund to house a private purpose trust.
Yes, and one small correction on that. It's a fiduciary fund, but instead of a private purpose trust, it's actually an agency fund. And so, that was something that got missed on the naming convention there. But
so it should be the city treasurer to create an agency fund.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And it sounds like you did get the memo attached with that. And basically, that just kind of gives you a little more explanation of what that is and what it's about. And ultimately, what it is, it's just to separate the cash of that belongs to someone else other than the city, but we're still in possession. And in this case, it's a development reimbursement agreement. We've set the money out. There's some kind of dispute between other parties outside the scope of the city's intervention. The money, as a result of that dispute, got sent back to the city. Instead of putting it into our general monetary fund, we need to account for it separately. So this basically just gives that opportunity. It doesn't generate a fund balance, any revenue, any expenses, just simply a liability. So.
Yeah, that would solve the mess that when they keep getting, no, we're going to take it, and
well,
you put it here, and you know, you said it just seems that we need this fund to for efficiency.
I move we approve resolution number R08-2013, authorizing the city treasurer to create an agency fund.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in. We don't have to have an individual on this one, do we?
We do.
Okay. All those in favor of resolution number R08-2013, say aye.
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 All those opposed say no. Motion carried. All right, that ends the formal part of that. I promised Gordon, he's at the awards ceremony, picking up an award for the downtown circulation plan, what have you. So we have had a number of people now that are writing us and calling us and what have you, very unhappy about the fact that they've been paying their fee every month to hook up to the pressurized irrigation. And we're not able to do that. And so now they're wondering what they're doing. Are we going to charge them for this? Are we going to charge them for that? So what Gordon would like and what I would like is to let the council know that we'd like to contract out the crossings of Boise Avenue and possibly School Street. Our staff will do the rest of it, but that contracting, we always did have that in the budget, and so he'd like to get three people bids and then bring that to the council next time. If you are in agreement that we should proceed at least we'll get those people hooked up before the pressurized irrigation season's over. And he'll bring those to the council for their approval. It's just jumping it a little bit. He would have liked to have presented it tonight, but we weren't ready for it. So I guess I would ask, is there any objections to having him get three bids to or contractor to cross Boise Avenue to pressurize irrigation?
Was that the work we'd approved last time?
Was it what?
Was that the work we'd approved last time?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it's Mr. Mayor, that bundler.
He set out some additional information with actual figures attached to it, so it makes yeah. a lot more sense now that we see that. So
okay, neat.
So yeah, that would be my preference. Okay.
The only drawback I have to those mayors is the assumption, I believe, and I don't have the figures in front of me, was a payback, I thought, of 33 years, 34 years. Does that sound right? The $250,000. I guess my question is, that's assuming that all 90 homes will sign up for the pressurized irrigation. If that's not true and half of them sign up, now you're looking at 67 years for a payback to the city. So are we getting out of proportion on a payback as to... And I believe that was both pressurized irrigation and potable water savings that it would take us. And I apologize if my years are off, but I thought it was 33 or 34 years. That seems like a long payback time if only half or even a third of them sign up. Now you're at 99 years, almost yeah. 100. Is the cost worth it?
Well, I think if we're going to put pressurized irrigation to any of them, we got to cross Boise Avenue.
Right.
And so once that phase is done, and you approve it and it's done, then Jeff Lang is working on a community or a subdivision-wide meeting. We'll sit down with all of those people and go over the pressurized irrigation. And if there's no interest, because there's... You know, I ran into a number of houses down here that really aren't interested. They say, we'll just conserve our drinking water and that's all we're going to do. And so at that point, we'll take a look at how much pressurized do we have to put in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we could cut that down considerably because it's going to depend on whether people are going to use it or not.
And I apologize to the council if my figures are off. I'm just going by memory. I think we just got that today. About
yeah, it was,
3
you're o'clock. Close. You're close. I don't remember exactly, yeah. but yeah.
So it's something I think we need to address if we're going to put a quarter of a million out, or if the payback is 100 years, it definitely isn't worth it.
So. Well, and if we give people access to pressurized irrigation, then we're no longer going to subsidize the potable water for
right.
them, their usage,
right.
and so
that'll change a lot of minds of people that mm-hmm. at least would mine.
Yeah,
I was kidding. Yeah. Okay, I'll tell Gordon to proceed. All right, other discussion items. All right, I guess we're going to...
Mayor, I'm sorry, I can just add very quick. I think last time you got asked if a copy of the judgment and the LID is available. Yeah, so the mayor's had a copy of it, but instead of burdening everybody with light reading over the weekend to get ready, I'll burden your next week with it.
There goes another forest, then.
There goes another forest.
Yeah. And it's not easy light reading. So are we going to have executive council?
We are.
I move we adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 67-2345F for the purpose of discussing potential litigation and Idaho Code 67-2345C for the purpose of discussing potential property acquisition.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to go into executive session. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Mayor, we need a roll call.
Oh, go ahead. Would you poll them, please?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Hoyland?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin van der Hart?
Yes.
Council Member Steer?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, the council is going into executive session. for all of those purposes that Brianna said. Motion to come out of the...
Go out of executive session.
Is there a second?
Second.
Move second to go out of the executive session. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Okay, we're out of the, back to the regular session. We have...
I'm going to be here.
Okay.
Second.
Move second. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Adjourned.
Guess I ought to ask you what the tickets cost.